several things here. So thank you for the introduction to Patrick Wren, even though you couldn't make it on the call. We had a good meeting and a good follow-up, and that was a good connection. I really appreciate that. I didn't ask him. I'm curious if you know. I did ask him. Never mind. So I was curious about something. By the way, your team doesn't get an F, but they get a C minus on rapid response. I forwarded the email again to Cindy this morning, copied you. I sent a follow-up email after our conference call with John, our Zoom call with John on the 19th, saying, hey, John, had offered to, you know, give out his cell phone and or email to anybody on the Zoom meeting. Would you please give that to me? And also I had several questions. So I sent that email out on the 19th of July and I yet to have a response. So I forwarded that email to Cindy and Lori and copied you on it this morning.
That sucks.
Yes, it kind of does. All right. So there was a couple other questions in the email. One was his information and two was, I had asked him the question, how many households was he down to now? And he said 125. But then after he kept talking towards the end, it's my understanding that he doesn't have 125. So he has a junior advisor, I guess. Is that what I'm understanding?
He's got a long time sales assistant that he made into a partner.
Uh-huh. And so she's licensed?
She runs the practice.
Right. So how many of those households does she have and how many does he have?
Well, did you hear how they do it?
Yes.
I think that probably is the way they do it. That she runs,
she does the monthly phone calls and the topics. And then, so does he only do in-person meetings or he just
does the quarterly reviews and, he'll occasionally step in and help her out and do one of the monthly ones.
Okay.
Not something I recommend, but it's the way it works best for him. So, you know, he's 68, so you can understand that he doesn't want to kill himself.
Yes.
So between the other two girls, they split up those monthly calls. Okay. So they are really information calls, not as much complicated case study work.
Gotcha. Well, it's kind of in a way it's encouraging to me because at some point, in the future, if I slow down you could always have someone do the regular calls, and do the quarterly reviews. Although as you suggested, I think the risk in that is you lose some of the familiarity and the relationship and the connection.
Well, the thing that I get from people is that, and you've probably found this. I mean, you're better. You do them so you can tell me, but somebody explained it, Rob, it's not like it's 12-4-2. It's like it's one long conversation.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's like an ongoing conversation is how I would say an ongoing communication. It's a relationship, right?
It's a relationship. It's like you call your brother every month, you know?
Yeah.
Call him every week.
For John, it's a big transformation because of when he started in his age, you know, and even for me, it's been a transition because even when I first started the business in 2000, it was really much about sales and especially not that we're not still about sales, but it was more transaction and sales oriented. And even though relationship was a part of it and you had to build a relationship, it wasn't this level of relationship. And so, you know, that's been a to move from more transaction to advisory has been a transition over my career and a good transition.
So I would suggest, you know, probably the next time I do a call with John, I'd like to have it with Tracy and John or all three of them, maybe all four. So there's sales assistant, another FA, and then an intern who's become a junior person. Now he's not a partner yet, but he will be, Sam.
Yeah, so, and my friend at Merrill, he did the same thing. He had a longtime sales assistant and he recently made her a partner. And so, you know.
Yeah, if they're capable, I mean, they're never going to go out and generate new business, but what they are going to do is keep the business for you. And then if you can bring on another Sam, a young guy that's a tiger, then they can, they're the rainmaker in the future and can take over the practice.
Right.
A lot of times, Preston, what you see is the other guy I'd love to get on here is a guy named Rick Rogers, who's 65. His partner's around 40. And then they're got an intern through my program, Supernova Scholars, that's, you know, going to go to work for them that will be 22 or three, you know, 22 when they go to work. So every 20 years, they got the gap filled. And so they're not going to get people asking that question. When are you going to retire or what's going to happen to them? They really don't ask. They don't care when you're going to retire. What they want is who's going to take care of me? What's right. going to happen right. to me?
If you, right? if you do retire, yeah. Yeah. And I had someone, I've got a third meeting with a, I hope she becomes a client. I think it's going well. With an Apple executive that does really well and has got some good network to be a great new client. And yeah, she asked me that question. She said, you know, well, what happens if something happens to you? You know, and it's a great question.
Yeah.
And I actually had a good answer. I said, well, we just hired someone that I think that we're working that I said, one, we have a process in place and two, we just hired a new team member that would be a great fit if something happened to me. She was like, okay. And it is a question I've gotten before. So who did you
hire?
Well, this is with Cynthia, our director of client services, but you know, we talked about her transition from director of client services to,
right.
Shelley's role to financial planner to advisor.
Right.
I mean, when she was a finance manager, she was making about $150,000 a year at the dealership. So I mean, she's definitely capable and very eager and smart. And she's 36, by the way. She's a little older than I originally thought. So that's good news.
Yeah, that is good news. Okay. Yeah, that's great because that was that, you know, this guy, the guy that's 45 was a financial planning specialist for the right. region. And he basically hired him away from that job to work on his team.
So that kind of fits in line with other things. So let's say, for example, and I think it's a good model, although I have to kind of think it through, you know, it's always that trade-off of complexity versus simplicity and all those kind of things, right? So let's say that I buy another advisor's practice that's 65 at Sunset now.
Yeah.
Of our practice. And let's say that Cynthia comes up over time or even we hire another junior advisor, right?
Right.
So would you still be at 70 max households for all three of us or it'd be 70?
Oh no. It's a number that you can work with comfortably.
See, that kind of comes. So that's my only concern is then that complicates things because now you've got to have more support staff in place and more overhead. See what I'm saying?
Not necessarily. The guy that retires and brings his practice to you is
right.
clearly going to bring accounts.
Right.
It's not one account. So, you know, let's say that your max is 70, right? And he
right.
has a typical person that you're going to buy his practice is going to have 200 clients.
At least, yeah.
He's not doing Supernova, right?
Right, that's right. They're going to have 200 or 300, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Probably 300.
And they've got 70 good ones, right? Maybe, right. maybe 50.
Right.
Okay, so your question is, what do I do? I'm going to keep the 50.
Right.
Or 70. Now, what do I do with the rest? Is there a critical mass there that's worth something or is it just garbage? And so that when you do your forensics and your analysis of his practice,
yes,
that's what you need to come up with. Of his clients, which would make the cut or potentially make the cut?
And so let's say that there's 50. What do you do with the other 150?
Well, that's what you have to make an economic decision on.
Right.
All right.
Option is you could hire someone just to service those accounts.
Right.
So let's say that.
Let's say that Cynthia.
Yeah. Right.
Right. She's registered. You're not paying her a tremendous salary.
Right.
And those clients make the whole economics of your team work.
It can sometimes.
I know.
In my experience, and here's what I'm seeing, even now, even with only 66 households, right? Really, I mean, it's the 4-1 clients that are eating up your time because they sporadically call and they make requests.
I completely agree.
And it's so really,
it's still the 80-20 rule, even with.
And so even though you're not getting the highest level of service because they're not getting, like, you know, someone's paying you $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, it's no problem for the 12 calls and meetings and anything else they want. Like there's something last year, I think, so I was like, well, they've called it. I was like, look, they're paying us $40,000 a year. Give them whatever they want. If they want to do that every month, do it. They're paying us $40,000 a year. Whatever they want, they can have it and we'll pay for it. You know, she's like, oh, I was like, gotta keep that in perspective. They're paying us $4,000 a year. No, $40,000 a year. Yes, whatever they want.
So again, Preston, you're a salesman for Supernova. I'm just telling you your options, okay?
Yeah. So that's one option. I vote for simplicity and deep relationships. And so
what you need is somebody in the local community that you can trust, that you can say, here's 150 relationships. I'd like you to take them all.
Yeah. And you would just give them to them. Okay.
The greatest thing you can do to destroy another person's business is give them those 150 clients. you just weigh them down. It's like taking a frogman and handing him lead weights.
Gotcha.
Stuck at the bottom.
And you don't think the senior advisors are going to balk at that? So you buy their practice and then you gift away the majority of their.
You wait till he's bought out and done. Okay.
At the end of the buyout. So if it's a 3-year, you keep those clients on for 3 years or 5 years.
And then you dump them.
I gotcha. Okay. So where you see it executed best is, let's say you have a 3-team, cause like, and talking with Patrick, it's pretty obvious, like his son, cause I kind of tell this on his website, like, you know, he's basically his son is a golf instructor and he said if he could make a living at that full time, that's what he'd be doing, you know? So it sounds to me like the son, this is a way for his son to not just be on the dole, but to actually earn his keep somewhat. Cause he figures when dad dies, I guess he's going to be okay is what my guess is. And so it's a way to keep the son not just on the, you know, he's on the payroll, but he has to actually do something for it. And then the other lady, kind of a similar deal, sounds like it was a financial planner, sales assistant, combination, cause it sounds like she just backs him up. And then there's another person. So basically has two full-time ladies that work for him,
yep,
plus him. And he's about your age, isn't he?
I don't think he's that old, is he? No.
I think he's your age or older.
What?
Because I read his book, and based on his book, I mean, he's at least your age. He may be older. He may be closer to 80.
Oh, I didn't know that. He acts like he's a kid.
No. So, I mean, I didn't ask him his age, but based on face-to-face and his book, when it's about his dad and when he was a kid, he's got to be, he started in the business in 1973. He was in the business in 73 as a licensed advisor. So if he had to be in his 20s then.
That's my age.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
76. Right.
And actually,
I started in 72.
Yeah. And so we have a lot, and maybe he started in 72. He was in the business in 73 and 74. So maybe he started in 72, but he's been through all different kinds of partnerships and this and that, da da da. And I didn't realize how long he'd been with Raymond James. Why he didn't go RIA is absurd to me. He's got their hybrid model. He was like the pilot program for the hybrid model. Anyway, I'm not sure why he didn't switch to RIA.
He doesn't want the compliance issues.
Simplicity, I guess. Well, yeah, I guess so.
That's it. That's, I guarantee you that my age people do not want to deal with that crap. We're willing to pay somebody, the firm.
But you can pay it. You can get it cheaper. But anyway.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
But that's our mentality. We also stayed with the same firm for
that's right. 40
years.
Well, you can stay with Raymond James. They have three different models. They have Wirehouse, Hybrid, right. And then they have an RIA model. But anyway, I actually think they have four. But anyway, good connection. We have a lot in common. I may try and see him. Maybe we can get together and then go to Atlanta or something. Might be able to work out. There's a big car show they have every year in Atlanta. I don't know if you're a car guy, but Price and I are. And so it may be something I'll take him to and then go stop by and see Patrick. But basically, like, kind of similar to you, like he said, you know, I haven't seen a lot of people, and he kind of has already made the same observations I have, which is he said he hadn't seen a lot of guys do retirement well, right? And so that he said, and I see the same thing here. He said, now there's the corporate executive guys that, you know, they're working, or guys have some kind of business that they're working 70, 80, 100 hours a week. They're traveling on the road and they're just exhausted, you know, and they're just like, I can't keep doing this. I'm going to die. But after a couple of years, they get a little bored. I see it at Horseshoe Bay all the time. These guys are high level executives. After a few years, like their day is, their whole purpose in life is playing golf. It's kind of sad, actually, you know. And nothing wrong with playing golf. Nothing wrong with spending time with your grandkids, but it's just kind of sad when all of a sudden your whole purpose in life is playing golf. And of course, a lot of them, their wives make them get up and go play golf because they can't stay around the house all day because for the last 40 years or 30 plus years, they've been on the road Monday through Friday. And so, you know, the wives still want their freedom, you know. So anyway, he just said that's kind of, you know, how he's doing it is, sounds like he's kind of slowing down, but still engaged in those kind of things, which is really my plan is to, you know, be involved and active as long as I can, as long as I'm healthy, physically, mentally, emotionally.
Well, you have a very clear why. You know, I have this guy that just wants to hire me. He's doing 25 million. He wants to do 50 million. Okay. And clearly there's a lot of ego involved.
In revenue, 25 million in revenue?
Revenue, yeah. And so he's got an office basically that works for him.
Yeah, those, I found that too. Like you look in Forbes, they all have somewhere between 10 to 100 or 300 advisors that work for him. I have no ambition to want to be that.
No. No, the question is that I had after my conversation, I sat back and thought about him. And I said, I didn't hear the why. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And without the why, you know, you can want to do it, but your team doesn't care.
That's right.
So you can't motivate an entire team to do it unless, you know, it's clear what's in it for them. And if you have a bigger mission, it can really help to get everybody on board. So that's where I got to spend some time with him. And I was just making sure that I knew the why for every person that I'm coaching, because without that, it's really hard to be as disciplined as you should be. You know, I always said that you need if you're going to really want to get in shape, you need a mountain to climb or a marathon to run, right?
Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, what can you do with, if you don't have an important why, you know, what can you do with 50 million revenue that you can't do with 25 million in revenue? Well, I can buy a bigger plane. Yeah, you.
I mean, the thing that's been interesting about the oligarchs is the boats, the ships they own. Mm-hmm. The question to me is, why?
Right.
Right? Why? Why do you need a boat? Why do you need a big boat? You get all the big celebrities have huge boats. I'm like, where do they put them and why do they have them and how much time can they spend on them and what's the point?
Very little. Yeah, I saw something like that where they're all the mega yachts and stuff. There was just one guy, successful business owner, and I guess he either couldn't get away all the way to the ocean, which seems like if you had that kind of money, you could just get a bigger jet. But anyway, so he's got this big yacht on like Lake Michigan, and you know, it's the largest, you know, freshwater yacht in the country, and it's, you know, 50 or 70, some ridiculous amount of money, you know. And they said the number of days that he spent on there. It was less than 4 weeks a year, you know, and you think right. about how much capital and it's like, why?
Rent is
cheaper to rent.
Well, and what good those people could do with that money?
You know, that was the sad thing for me. I hadn't been to Breckenridge in a while, and the wealth that's up there, the neighborhoods, even where we're staying, you know, I mean, the house we rent in the neighborhood, I mean, you know, we rented for $500 a night. It's a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, $2 million house, you know. And all the other houses in the neighborhood start at about 3.5 and go up to maybe 7 or 8. And then some of the other neighborhoods are 10 and 15 and 18 and 20 and $30 million. And you just look around and you're like, nothing wrong with that. That's great. But you look at the, how many of those homes are probably second or third homes. You figure how much time they spend. You figure how much revenue, how much capital they've tied up, how much expenses, all that stuff. You're like, man, it like, and one of the things, there's an article in the paper about the poverty problem in Summit County. And the sheriff, there was an article in the newspaper, and the sheriff was talking about that people wouldn't believe how many people come out of the woods each morning as he's driving, you know, down the road, coming out to go to work, but they can't, cost of living so expensive there. They can't afford an apartment. They're living in a tent in the woods. And then they come out every morning. And like, think of all those wealthy people in that area. Well, you know, there's some very smart people that either are corporate executives, were corporate executives, are business owners. I mean, if you own a second home that's in the $3 to $5 million range, you've got some revenue stream, right? You got some, I mean, unless you just hit the trust lotto, you've got some smarts, you got some ability. You didn't just, you know, fall into that kind of wealth. And imagine if they all got together, the kind of things and the problems they could solve in their community. But they're just kind of living in their, some of them, not all of them, but you can tell they're living in their Eiffel Towers. And it's kind of sad, really.
It's they're living in their bubble.
That's right, their bubble, yeah.
That's true. You know, anyway, that we digress, but I think, yeah. I think the why is an important planning question.
That's right. Yes. So I'm kind of encouraging you to say that is really important, because it doesn't really matter if someone's doing, you know, $2 million revenue or $25 million revenue. If they don't have a clear why, it's going to be hard.
Right. And the same for you with every interview you do. That's such an important question to ask, is that, let's say we are successful. You know, what do you want as your legacy? What's your why? You know, why are you, you know, why, other than being safe, right? We all want to be safe. We want to be secure, safe, secure. We're all going to die. So that's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't protect yourself from everything. Some, you know, something that you didn't anticipate, or you just may die of old age. But the idea is that you can't take it with you. I mean, with all these expressions are for real. So, you know, what's your legacy? What's going to, you know, it's so interesting, because I read now at my age, you start to read these legacy, you know, their obituaries.
Right.
And they're lovely, but they're meaningless most of the time. They didn't move the needle. You know, they lived a great life and they loved horses and they played golf and they, you know, and they had a great career and they've got great grandchildren. The grandchildren love them. Okay. That's the legacy of 90%. And then once in a while, there'll be somebody that did something, started a hospital and changed the world. And it'll be like one in 30, you know.
Yeah, we'll all get to stand before Jesus and he'll say, okay, I gave you one talent. I gave you 3 talents. I gave you 5. What'd you do with the talents I gave you? And then we're going to have to give account.
Yeah, I won the game. Yeah, and so what'd you do with that win? Right?
Right. So that kind of ties into our last conversation. So, you know, TD and Schwab are still in the middle of the merger, but they're having, and I normally don't like going to these. I'm not a big conference person. I've been to so many over the years, but they are having a conference. This always cracks me up. They should shoot whoever plans these conference. They're having a conference November 4th in Denver, which, you know, that's where everybody wants to be in November is Denver. Yeah.
Especially that's like the week before elections, but anyway.
Oh yeah. Orion had one last year in August, and guess where it was?
In Arizona.
Yeah, Phoenix. I'm like, who wants to go to Phoenix in August?
That's because they can get
that one in Denver.
It's because they can get it cheap.
That's right. So anyway, having said that, do you think I should go to that and be looking for that, you know, that older advisor that might, because I think one of the advantages for me is now that Schwab and TD are merging, that gives me a bigger pool of advisors to potentially buy their practice, where before it's just TDA, maybe. I mean, because the easiest merger is someone that's already the same platform. It's a pain in the rear end to switch. And most older guys don't.
I think you're answering your own question.
Okay. All right. All right. So I think that's a good opportunity and should probably start doing that. And then maybe even with Orion too. And then, so this is a little bit of a, by the way, how are things going? I talked to Brad Blessing before I left and I asked him how things are going. He said, well, we're just getting started. So I'm kind of curious to get your input on.
He won't return phone calls or emails.
Your phone calls or emails?
Cindy's trying to sign him up and he hasn't yet.
So he hasn't committed.
He hasn't committed.
Huh. Well, that's unfortunate. I hope that he does. Do you, anything I can do to help you or anything you want, would like for me?
Well, it's, you know, I met today and his name didn't come up. Usually we run through all of the prospects and I'll just have to make a note to ask her again.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to him on the 19th and I said, how are things going with Rob? And he said, well, we're just really getting started is what he said. So I thought maybe we were just going through the process, but it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, he was all yes, 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 yes. And life was good. And, you know, maybe it's writing the check. Maybe it's changing. Maybe it's, you know, the psychology of what he does. You know, I'm busy. I'm busy. I'm busy.
It's really, it's unfortunate.
That's
well,
what
I, but the reason why they I ask
they do that for a living. They stay busy for a living.
Yeah, that's right. The reason I asked that question is I had asked him if he wanted to join our mastermind group that we didn't have a CPA. And since I thought he was going to be in Supernova, I thought it'd be a good fit. And he said, yeah, I'd love to do that. I think that'd be great. I'd love to be in that group. So, but I don't know.
I would wait until he proves that he is who you want him to be, not who he's been.
Before I let him join.
Yep.
Okay. I think that's good. That was the reason I circled back about that. So, CPA, banker, myself, realtor. Think I should let a business attorney in that group?
Yeah. If he's good. I mean, what you really want is talent, right? You want talent and personality. People you can be friends with.
You know, I've got another client who is a realtor and he's a really good realtor. I mean, like, you know, he's like the top, you know, when it comes to waterfront property, high-end property, he's good. He's also my client that, you know, I've tried to get him to get a personal assistant and, you know, he got so close. I got it down to where it's like going to cost me $500 just to try it, you know, and he got so close and he said, well, I took a day and figured all the things I delegate and how much time it'd take me. And it was just, he was like, it would just end up frustrating me because it'd take me more time to delegate these things than to do it myself. And I'm just like, okay, you know,
no,
so frustrating.
Yeah, the answer is no. You want a smart person that you don't have to train.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So realtor. And then, so we don't have a business broker here. We don't have, well, actually there is one right there, but I don't trust him or like him.
Insurance agents can be very good as long as they're not, you know, they're selling products and services that you don't sell.
That's really difficult to do these days because every auto insurance agent does sell life insurance and long-term care insurance. So, but actually I hadn't thought about an insurance agent and, I have an insurance agent in my B&I group who's really good. And I'm actually her client and she potentially is going to be a client of mine. She's the one who introduced me to this Apple executive and you know, she knows that, you know, I tell her, like, hey, I have my life insurance. I have my long-term care insurance. Here's why we do that. And I don't feel like, but you know, they get those automated emails from Allstate and things like that. So I don't really know any insurance agents that aren't at least licensed to sell life and those kind of things, other than the health insurance, someone that just focuses on health insurance, but I don't know how they would benefit our group.
So that would be a call that you'd have to make.
Okay.
But she sounds like if she's already sent you the Apple person.
Yeah.
That maybe you guys can kind of have a.
And she introduced me to another client that's a current client of ours. So.
Yeah, I would say that she would be a very good candidate. You just come to an agreement that you're not going to poach each other's insurance business.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So how many people would you have maximum in that group?
Six.
Okay.
You can start it with three or four with a maximum of six.
All right. So anyone else you would suggest?
I'd start it with that and then feel it out.
Okay.
I mean, we typically, you know, what I typically tell you is that you want CPA attorney, estate planning attorney. You know, estate planning attorneys are notoriously poor people to send introductions.
Yes, because they don't give any back.
They don't give any back. So maybe leave them out. Commercial realtor, residential realtor. And then insurance agents for health and things that you don't sell. And then, you know, any other business, like one of the guys, this is weird, but, one of the guys that does this really well in Indianapolis is a CPA, but he's a CPA with a personality. He's an entrepreneur. And what they have is a business. They set up a mastermind group for people that are selling their businesses.
Right.
And so they have a psychologist on there.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And that psychologist is there to help a person during their transition from, you know, absolutely identifying, you know, there's an, Jim Lehrer had a question we had to answer was, who are you without your money or without your job?
Right.
Right. So in this case, who are you without your job? Is
that'd be a good question to ask the $25 to $50 million guy.
Exactly. I agree.
Because okay.
I can spend a year or 2 years on him and, you know, he could be very dissatisfied with the whole experience if we aren't working towards something that's of value, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because you can't control the markets and, you know, this year is a good example, right? You can't control the economy. And so if those go the opposite way, it's right up from 25 to 15 or 18, depending on how his business model is set up, could go to 12.
He's still growing. He's a maniac. So it's funny, you get guys that get that centrifugal force, that gravity going, right? Where people are throwing money at you. He's just can't keep up with it. So, you know, but he's completely disorganized. He doesn't understand he's running an office. You know, and so when I talked to him, I mean, I was very open with him about, you know, you're running an office. You need what I did, my experience in running a complex and running, and I hired and trained managers.
Right.
I've got a leadership program for managers. That's the program you need. You don't need a program for an FA.
Yeah.
And I can train your whole team, which is what he wanted me to do. But if I don't train you, then it's a waste of time.
Yeah, like with John.
Correct.
So is there, cause I, you know, I re-listened to your book and I've read the teams or anything else. Is there someone who, like the person you mentioned about has a psychology team that has sort of maybe, or that lady in your book that has an agenda and how they have the agenda set up for the mastermind group?
Well, with these guys, they are really there to, I mean, that's what their purpose is to help business owners. So they have a real agenda. I mean, it isn't as much of a.
Well, like what I'm thinking about is, so, cause I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up being in charge.
Which you want to be.
Okay. And the banker's okay using his facility and me. He had mentioned that they're in another group and it's okay. How can I help? But they're all bankers. So if we come together, I'm going to need maybe some 24-month calendar on, you know, here's different topics that helps all of us, but also that people feel like they have equal time.
All right. So here's the game. If you run it like, young YPO was kind of the model that I always used because those guys love to go to those things and they're addicted to them and they spend a lot of time with each other.
What's YPO?
Young President's Organization.
Oh, okay.
But you don't need that. But the idea of it is that what they do is it's all very confidential.
Right.
They agree to be confidential up front. So every meeting you bring a problem and an idea. Okay. For the group. And with the remaining time, whatever you give yourself, you focus on one person. And my intention would be to, like, if you go to the banker's premises for that meeting, you concentrate on his situation, his personal situation. What your job in the bank, where are you? What are your challenges? How can we help you to be more successful in your job? So it's kind of full disclosure. And then you move to the insurance agent's facilities and you do the same thing for them. So they're kind of in the hot seat. And the idea is that they, you know, they bare their soul and tell you what they're good and the bad and the ugly about their business and what they need to do and trying to do. And how can you guys help? And you give opinions, but you also might be able to solve an issue for them. So that takes a lot of courage to do that.
And so you would just focus on one person, you're saying, per meeting. So like this time we focus on the banker, maybe next time we focus on the insurance agent, maybe next time we focus
right.
on.
And they.
So does everybody still get to say what their problem and idea for the group is?
Yes. So you take the first whatever.
And you feel confident you can do all this in an hour?
Not if you're going to do the other. No. So maybe you do quarterly, you focus on one person. And monthly you meet with a good idea and a challenge. I'm just thinking realistically, and that quarterly meeting is a couple hours or dinner or something.
See, that's really out for anybody who has kids. The dinner is. And so normally lunch, you could do a lunch meeting, but maybe you could do an hour and a half meeting or something.
Yeah.
Quarterly.
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys are, you know, you work out what you think works for them.
I'm just trying to visualize how to run the meeting so that one, we stay on time. That's going to be important to everybody, but also that everybody feels they're getting value from the meeting. Cause if you come and you don't feel like you're getting any value then. All right. So let's say there's six, let's say we start with four, you said 3 to 4 people start minimum.
Yeah.
Okay. So we start with 3 people. Obviously you got more time with 3 people and do 6, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to say, Rob, you know, tell us a problem that you're having in your business and then give an idea for the group, right?
Yep.
So you would say that, you would say, hey, here's a problem I'm having. And then, so we'd all write that problem down and then we're going to circle back to that, or how's that going to?
No, you talk about it. I mean, you try and solve it right there.
Okay. So then we all say, here's an idea that I have.
Right. Yeah, because the problems are going to be universal. Okay. You know, I can't find good people.
Employees. Yeah. That's
right.
Right.
So,
right. So then we go on to the next person. Okay. What's a problem you have?
Right. I got a shitty boss. You know, all right. I'm doing all the work and he's getting all the credit, whatever. You know, okay. all the problems are going to be problems people have always heard about. You know,
so how is that going to be different than a quarterly? That's what I'm.
Well, in the quarterly, you'd spend the majority of the time on the one person. and he kind of lay out, maybe he lays out his entire business plan for you, right? And shows you the revenues and shows you what he's doing and profit margins and other things that he's having, you know, he's wrestling.
That takes a really high trust level right there.
Well, then maybe, you know, that's where you gotta,
you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't have a problem with that. I'm just saying
right.
That.
You just sign something and say, you know, you're just confidentiality agreement.
And then, what would you do? Like in your book, the lady made people sign an agreement with an attendance policy. So right. There's no, so what would you, right.
The ones that work are the ones that they sign something and they agree to it. There's a contract.
And I like that. I like that idea because it's a lot easier to enforce that. It's like, in my opinion, I've done this every contractor and real estate work is if you have a problem and you have an agreement, then you go to the agreement. Hey, our agreement's broken. How can we fix the agreement?
And then right. It's not me. It's our
agreement. Right. The relationship's not broken. You're not broken. The agreement's broken. Let's fix the agreement. And now we had jeopardized relationship. If you don't have an agreement, then it's your sorry SOB and, you know, and it's personal. So let's say we met 10 times a year. Cause you'd take a couple of months off when you like major in the summer.
Yeah.
Right. So 10 times a year. Quarterly, kind of do 12-4-2, but abbreviated version.
And then you can do a sundown provision where you say, you know what? We're going to do this for a year and then we're going to revisit it.
Okay. And so what would you have? If you had 10 meetings a year, what would you say is mandatory attendance? Eight out of the 10?
Yeah.
I like that idea. This is maybe kind of a silly question. I'd actually asked Patrick, but maybe he was on vacation. And I've done it both ways. So, and Patrick's big on this too. I've been going back to it this year. Maybe I drifted a little away from it. Works so well. But, you know, the buckets. Basically, you have three buckets. You have a cash bucket, a short-term bucket, and a long-term bucket, right? And we talk about that. But I've been talking about it a lot more in this year than I have been preachers. And in the past, I have actually had three separate accounts, like three separate brokerage accounts. One was their cash account. One was their short term and one was their long term. That way, hey, you got this one separate. You got this one separate. And then, I've also done it where, you know, we just combined them all into one account and everything has a trade off. And the custodians don't like it if you have a brokerage account with no activity other than cash. So that's only. And then of course the downside, again, everything has trade-off. If you have a separate account, you can just print performance off on that short-term account or that cash account, or just that long-term account. If you put them all together, then it can help and hurt. When things are going up, it dilutes the returns. When things are going down, it helps the returns. They don't look so bad. So I was curious if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think you can play it both ways.
It's kind of a psychology thing.
Yeah, I would, you know, when things are going good, I focus on the account and the performance of the account separately, right? And when things are going poorly, I would focus on the conglomerate performance.
Okay. So you think, so I'm just curious your opinion. I mean, I get that, but I mean, it's kind of a six and a half dozen the other, I guess, about having three separate accounts or in a uniform account.
Yeah, I mean, I've never separated them myself, and I've never known anybody that actually did separate them. But it, you know,
but once upon a time, the reason we did was when people would do more check writing and things like that out of it, it made it confusing. You know, they couldn't ever keep their balance with all those dividends.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just my mantra during this period is. No one spends the right amount of money in retirement.
Yeah. They just spend way too much or way too little.
Well, just think about it. You cannot spend the exact right amount because everything is always changing, right?
Everything's always moving. Yeah.
Right. So when they say, you know, when you can give them that guarantee, you'll never be spending the right amount of money. You're either going to be spending too much or too little. My job is to help you understand that and where you are in that spectrum. Okay. And so that's why we keep doing cash flow analysis. So what people really care about when the stock market is terrible They don't care that the stock market's terrible. They care that they aren't going to be able to maintain their lifestyle, or they're going to run out of money, or the unknown of that, right?
That's right.
And so no matter how much money they have, 50 million, 100 million, it doesn't matter. What matters is, am I okay?
That's right.
And the cash flow analysis is the key to determining whether they're okay or not. So,
and the Monte Carlo helps with that. I've been using that a lot more lately. And
right.
Hey, look, here's your probability of success.
And I think just doing it over time, maybe I'd do it quarterly, especially in tough markets, takes more effort. But at the same time, people get used to getting comfortable with the fact that they're okay. And giving people permission to take that cruise is a wonderful thing.
That's right.
It's just as important to tell them that, or you need to go get another job, right?
Right. Well, I had to have a really difficult conversation that was, they actually delayed with some clients before I left, and they intuitively knew they were spending too much. I mean, we'd sit down a financial plan, here's what you can spend, here's your maximum, blah, blah, blah. They would just call through everything, boom, need more money. But I'm like, hey, we can't just, it's not a cash register. So they came in, we had to have a difficult conversation. Like, here's the analysis of how much you told us you were spending. Here's how much we said you could. Here's how much you actually have the last 3 years, and you about doubled your spending every year. At this rate, you're going to run out of money in a few years, and we don't advise that. You need to make immediate, drastic changes. And, you know, it's tough. But every time I've had to deal with someone, it was a difficult conversation, but they really said, thank you for having the courage to do this and to bring turkey. We knew we were overspending. We just didn't really realize how bad it was.
And I had that conversation with every office at the end of every once a year. I had it with every office that I had. I said, one of you each have at least one of these clients. And I'd go through it. And I said, I want you to have basically the come to Jesus meeting, bring
That's
them
right.
in, talk to your manager and solve it. And in the end, if they won't let it, you fire them. We fired a $5 million client because they're giving away money faster than we could write the checks.
Right.
Right. They were crazy.
It's better because it's terrible, word of mouth that, you know, if they're under your management and they run out of money,
they'll sue you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We knew that this woman would sue us, or her heirs would sue us.
Right.
So we fired her, said, go create your debacle somewhere else.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's a good, you know, I know you're doing that, but I just wanted to emphasize that because I think that.
Well, as long as they take my advice, like, hey, you got to make this immediate change. And over the years, I've had to do the time too. And when they make the change, they're really appreciative that I bring their attention.
I think that's as valuable as you can spend more money.
That's right.
I mean, I think, you know, most people aren't there or there. They're
right.
They're here or here, you know.
That's right. So something I just want to get in my mind, because, you know, in terms of, like, you know, we're kind of limited on office space. I don't really desire to want to move again anytime soon, because that's a real pain in the rear end. And we like our office space. So let's say I had either Cynthia or I hired a junior advisor out of your program and I buy a senior advisor's practice. So one thing I had thought about it, I like to kind of get the big picture in my mind before I start moving in that direction. So Cynthia is actually, it's called Horseshoe Bay. We're all kind of together, but it'd be kind of like, you know, what's that little, it'd be like Franklin versus, you know, the community you're in, they're pretty close, you know.
Yeah, Nashville, yeah.
So, and maybe even not quite as far out as Franklin, whatever some other suburbs are right there around Nashville. So there's another community that's, you know, 10 miles away, 10 miles away that Cynthia lives in. We could certainly someday have her open an office. So I could kind of see in mind, I could keep the simplicity of my office, but maybe just have three office locations and then maybe transition those 50 clients over to this office or keep a remote office. Like in Lakeway, it's only about 20 miles away. So if I were to buy a senior advisor's practice in Lakeway, which is more probable since there's not in our community, if I buy Lakeway or San Antonio, maybe just over that time, I'm spending one day a week there too, and then eventually transition them over here. Is that kind of?
Yeah, that's a little complicated, but yeah, I mean, yes. You know, it's always easier if they're all under one roof.
Yeah.
You knew that's what I was going to say.
Pretty much. I thought you might.
You want to keep things simple.
Yeah, I like the simplicity.
Under one roof, even if you have to build a bigger roof.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to keep in mind. There's always plenty of office space. And hey, everything has a trade-off, right?
Exactly.
Everything has a trade-off. Okay. Anything that you'd like me to focus on between now and our next meeting?
No, I mean, the answer is, you know, I opened up a lot of satellite offices because I wanted convenient for the person that was coming over, right?
Right.
And therefore it made more work for me, but I got a lot of really good people. The key is it be the right person. You do a lot more for the right person than you will for just anybody.
That's a good point.
So if you have a fast growing suburb that you're not in and you've got a superstar that you can hire that's ready to retire, then, you know, 5 years of having that office out there is not a bad thing. You'd be willing to go through that in order to have a superstar or a young superstar that wants to work with you. Right?
Right. On your program, are they mostly coming out? So they're, are they mostly going to metro areas?
When I did it, what?
No, you said another advisor is hiring an advisor that's coming through your foundation's program.
Yeah, they're typically, in the same office.
No, That wasn't my question. My question is, are most of those, because your focus is on minorities, right?
Yeah, my interns.
Right. But are they coming out of, most of them are going to work for wirehouses as an intern because they want it to look good on their resume. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
And mostly those are in metro areas. So they're likely, they wouldn't be in it for me is what I'm trying to decide.
Right. At this point, no. But if we go do something in Dallas or something, then, you know. That would be, you know, we do something wherever this, I mean, at this point, it's a lot of work, Preston.
Yes.
For the returns I'm getting. I mean, it's a wonderful legacy, but I've got to make it more streamlined to that. It's kind of like you, you know, you want it simple. This is not simple. You know, I'm working with one university. Most of the kids I'm placing are around Washington DC. And at this point, I'm not interested in having, my plan originally was 10 universities and have 10 kids with each and 100 kids. It's much more complicated than that.
Well, you know the saying, right? Poor people just want to be wealthy. Wealthy people just want a simple life.
Well, I want to make a difference. But I'm not going to do it on the back of my back.
Yeah, you have to take all that in mind.
Yeah, I have to do it so that it can be scalable and other people can do it. I'm very good at delegating. I have no problem delegating.
I feel like I am too. I feel like I have no problem. My wife sometimes has a challenge doing it. I feel like I'm really good at delegating.
Well, you're good at delegating, but you want control. I'm good at delegating and I don't care as much about control.
Yeah, that's probably good analysis. How do I get better at that?
You gotta be willing to accept that people are going to get an F in rapid response. It was really hard when I first did this.
Yeah. So how do you solve that?
I just talk about it with them.
Say like, hey, people are paying us a rapid response. We're not giving it to them.
Yeah, we're writing the book and telling the story. How can we be shitty at it, you know? Do as I say, not as I do. But there's, you know, it at a certain point in your life, you kind of give up the perfection and say, you know what? My overall mission is happening. I can't control all the different participants in that mission, and therefore I will accept a little less perfection than I would have in the past.
That's good advice. Well, I was trying to pray about that and work on that. Maybe you can help me continue to be better at that.
I was a complete nutcake, but I was proud of being that nutcake. It was 100%. There was nothing else. There was nothing else in my life.
Right.
I mean, I was, Alabama's football coach. That's all I did.
Yeah.
And my mission was to win and to create great players and to have them live the legacy of winning and feel the excitement and do for my company and for my people what Alabama's football does for them. That was what my whole thing in life was. And that's the only thing I understood. Yeah. Now I see things very different, but I don't regret it in the sense of, I think there's very few people in the earth that can do what I did, are willing to do that. But there's a price you pay for it.
That's right. Yeah. Everything. So, yeah.
Everything has a price. And, but I don't.
A lot of people don't count the cost ahead of time.
But I don't understand the big boat thing. Okay.
Ego. It's ego.
I understand.
Pride and ego. That gets most men, right? Pride and ego.
I understand all the rest of it. You know, the Michael Jordan thing. I understand all that. I can identify with it. I just can't understand. I can't understand at this stage.
Well, they need something to do with all that extra money. And if they're not kingdom minded, their concept is, well, I got to spend it. Right.
Well, I guess
boat's a good way to spend a lot of your money.
Boats are houses, boats.
Hole in the water. You pour money into.
Right. And that one really, planes, big planes. I don't understand those. Little jet, I can understand.
Right.
Big jet, not so much. Yeah. Or even a medium sized jet, I can understand. But the boat? No idea. I have no idea what that is about. Anyway.
Hey, enjoy your time together. Have a great day.
Thanks.
I'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.